All right, thank you for joining us on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. I'm Eric Edholm alongside Arthur Arkish, my typical co-host, and we've got a lot of people helping us out, not only on the podcast, but also on the website. We should first mention Dan Mott, who's producing for us, doing a great job with the pod, trying to get the message out to all of you, all the great content we have here and on the website. And Arthur, we should mention some of our great contributors. We've got some people joining us here at PFW. John Ledyard wrote a good piece about the Steelers, very knowledgeable about the draft. We got Peter Bukowski. Maybe you can tell people a little bit about what he wrote, just talking about kind of the uncertainty at the top of the draft. A nice little contribution to PFW this week.
Yeah, both new freelancers making their debuts with PFW this week, as you mentioned. Peter had a nice piece just on how maybe the lack of blue-chip talent at the top of the draft, and then it doesn't seem like there's a real true quarterback consensus or how those guys are going to come off the board. Some of that uncertainty is going to lead to what Peter says will be even a more chaotic first round than we're accustomed to, and I agree with that. And something we discussed, too, that Peter picked up on as well, Eric, is kind of the maybe the best talents in this draft don't come at premium positions. So that's going to be one more thing that teams have to kind of, you know, wade through as they decide how they want to pick, especially at the top of round one.
Yeah, safest pick might be a guard, which we haven't really seen in a while in Quentin Nelson. We've got other contributors who've done great work for us, Marcus Mosher, and he's based down in Dallas, Adam Hogue, who does a lot of work here in Chicago as well. I want to start, though, this week. We got something really cool up at PFW, and anybody who I think is – you know, historian of the game, anyone who appreciates the past certainly is going to want to get involved in this. It's the Pro Football Weekly Team for the Ages. And Arthur, all of us at PFW and anybody who wants to contribute to this project and, you know, enter the contest can pick their own Team for the Ages. The last 50 years of the NFL. No, it does not include Jim Brown. He was already retired by then. We've had a few people write us and ask about that. But basically, it's the best players at every position, quarterback, running back, all the way down the line. And, when I went through and made my picks, I found it to be a little easier at certain positions, very hard at some. Just what were your thoughts when you went through and made your selections position by position? What were some of the big picture things that you picked up on there?
Well, it's a lot of fun, and let me just add to that. Yeah. It's Pro Football Weekly's golden anniversary, year number 50. So that's part of the reason for this Team for the Ages contest, picking the best 50 modern era players and basically building a roster of, if you will, the greatest modern team. So it is a ton of fun. I'd be lying, though, if I said it also isn't a little agonizing, but only if you overthink it. I think this is one of those things where you just want to make sure that you don't kind of kill yourself making – there's no wrong answers. These guys are all studs. They're on this ballot for a reason. But Eric, I thought you kind of hit it on the head with some of the positions that are tougher than others, inside linebacker, offensive tackle, two in particular, and then of course quarterback. I mean, how can you, you know, it's Peyton Manning and Joe Montana got left off my quarterback core, a list of three. So yeah, it's that's a pretty rough, you know, kind of equation to settle on.
Yeah, and besides it being a very fun project, it could also be a very lucrative one for some of you out there. Some great prizes, including two tickets to the big game next year. We know what the big game means. We can't actually say those words, but some other prizes that are just fantastic, and we're really putting a lot into this. I hope people check it out at ProFootballWeekly.com, the Team for the Ages, like you said, 50th anniversary of the publication. Wanted to celebrate it in style. So we've got that going on. We've also got some news we want to get to, and the latest was the Jason Pierre-Paul trade that went down on Thursday. And I guess it's not shocking, Arthur, when you look at it, but on the one hand, Pierre-Paul, boy, we didn't know if his career would even be going on after the hand injury from the fireworks accident in 2015. He's had a couple of productive seasons. He gets signed to the big contract last year, almost a year ago to the day, in fact. And the Giants get out from underneath that deal. They get a lot of dead money now, but they're making up for it on the back end, or at least sort of cleaning up that mess a little bit. But Tampa Bay also gets a pretty good rusher. Does this, I guess, what are your thoughts on the move? Does it affect the draft, the Giants, what they do at 2, the Bucks, what they do at 7? How much help can JPP give the Bucks right away, and what does this mean for New York?
Yeah, I mean, it's he's going to a Tampa Bay defense that had the worst pass rush in football last year, so it's going to be pretty difficult for him not to help that group. And I think it's a real nice get for them, for sure. It's also them taking on a lot of salary, although it actually most of the dead cap is going to sit on the Giants' salary cap this season. So I guess it's a bit of a kind of look and see what you think of JPP in the Buccaneers' scheme. Eric, my first reaction to this was that I said, well, wait a minute. I thought the Giants were going for it. They make that big trade for Alec Ogletree. All signs point to them not drafting a quarterback and rolling out with Eli 2 years removed from the playoffs. So I'm like, wait, don't they need JPP? And then quickly I realized this likely means David Gettleman has kind of settled on Bradley Chubb now that it looks like the Browns are going to go quarterback at number one. So, look, James Betcher comes in with his defense. He's going to install that aggressive 3-4, and I think the fit part of it here too, Eric, JPP's never played on his feet before, so that might have been too big of a projection for the Giants, and now he goes to a 40 defense where he'll be allowed to just kind of get up the field under Mike Smith.
Yeah, fascinating trade. They swap picks in round four, so the Giants get a tiny bump there, but they get the third-round pick, which gives them a little more or heft in the draft. They only had five picks coming in, and you're right about Chubb. It's natural to make that assumption because, you know, look, he's probably the best pass rusher available, best true, you know, edge guy in this class. Some people say, hey, you know, maybe there's still an option for them to move down for a quarterback-needy team coming up. You know, they could still get a Harold Landry or a Davenport or somebody like that. So we'll see. I mean, all options are on the table. You're right. Right now, it does feel like Chubb may be their guy. And Tampa just needed any kind of pressure source possible. I mean, they had 22 sacks last year, Arthur. The majority of them came from the interior guys. I mean, that was Gerald McCoy and such and Clinton McDonald. So, you know, they need somebody to come off the edge and provide something out there. He played 1 year in Tampa. He's maintained a home in the South Florida area, so maybe JPP is that guy. We shall see. So that's certainly an interesting thing that has an effect on the draft as well. So as we look now at the draft, and we kind of did a couple mock drafts, each of us this week, what was your process there going through? Because most of the free agent hay is in the barn now. We kind of have a pretty good picture of what 95% of the stuff's going to look like. But there's still a lot of trades out there. There's still a lot of moving parts. What was the toughest part when you started putting your mock together? Was it just figuring out how all the quarterback pieces go and then going from there?
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head, and then obviously trying to kind of pinpoint what exactly the Jets are doing. We know they're very likely to be going quarterback now at number three, and I don't think we've talked to our podcast listeners since that big trade went down last weekend. Obviously, the Jets and Colts swapping spots, and the Colts pick up three additional second rounders. So a big haul for Chris Ballard in terms of value, and should still get one of the draft's best players at number six. But heading back to the Jets at three, I think it's just figuring out who their guy is. So it's obviously a bit of a guessing game. That's sort of by definition what mock drafts are, educated guesses, if you will. But I went with Josh Allen to the Jets at number three. I don't know if that's maybe because, you know, Mike Maccagnan was drawn to Christian Hackenberg a couple years ago, and now you've got another guy whose accuracy is a big question. But then he's also got that quarterback room he's built with Josh McCown and Teddy Bridgewater. So in some ways, if you trust Jeremy Bates, if you trust the rest of the kind of incubation process that's there for a young quarterback, it might make sense to have a Josh Allen in New York, because I think we can probably both agree that he's going to have to sit and watch for a while if he's going to maximize his chances to be successful.
And that would back up their moves to bring back Josh McCown at $10 million, by the way, you know, for one more year, to bring in Teddy Bridgewater on a provisional type of contract where, hey, if he makes the team, he starts, he plays well, he contributes, he's going to get paid. If he's not where he needs to be and they have to cut him, the investment in him is relatively small. So a pretty good deal from that standpoint, too. And it would lend to your theory. It's funny, Arthur, you know, one of the teams that I've had the hardest time getting quality information from is the New York Jets. They're very secretive, especially since the GM, Mike Maccagnan, took over. He's kind of instituted this hush-hush policy a little bit down to their, you know, area scouts and the low-level assistants and people like that, you know. They've done a pretty good job of keeping things under wraps. So that's why, even though my instinct was to think, wow, you know, they could go for somebody like Rosen, who's probably the most ready-made guy, Baker Mayfield, who's got the, you know, the skill set and the persona to handle New York, over an Allen. But your rationale absolutely makes sense. And it seems a little wild to think, well, they went Hackenberg, they might as well go Allen. And yet at the same time, if those are the traits that they're looking for and they've looked for in the past, why wouldn't they go back there again? You know, why wouldn't they consider somebody who's got a cannon, who's got great athletic ability, but who just hasn't sort of figured it out yet and hasn't put it all together? So I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, no doubt. And you gotta kind of have to figure out how the rest of the quarterback pecking order goes. I'm going to throw it back to you. I know that your first mock draft actually went up at Yahoo, at your former employer. We have a deal with them where you're going to do some mocks for them. And it's going to link to Greg Gabriel's scouting reports on our site. So it sounds like a win-win for everyone. And so I'm very excited to take a look at that. But what was the other kind of fallout for you quarterback-wise? Or was there other bigger decisions for you in trying to form your mock? And I'll get back to a couple more of mine after I hear from you.
Yeah, I mean, what I did first was click on all of Greg's scouting reports to make sure I'm not just pulling things out of my tail here. You know what I mean? I got to at least know what I'm talking about. So Greg does an outstanding job. He's done our draft magazine as well. I know it feels like we're pushing a lot of stuff on our listeners, but we just have so much great content we have out there now. We want people to take advantage of it. But yeah, click on the links. And I try to just, you know, you can't just go down straight down the list. You got to think about what these teams look for. And I'm sure you guys will talk about it plenty on the Bears podcast that we have as well. And, you know, like using them as an example, instead of just saying, okay, let's pick the best player available for the Bears, or let's fill a need or whatever, let's also think about what do these teams seek for skill set wise. And that's why I think you and I both settled on Marcus Davenport from UTSA. And you try to look at how they've drafted in the past, what kind of players they seem to favor on their roster, including free agent acquisitions, things like that. You know, that's, I think, how mock drafts should be done. You know, it may not, because we always look, you know, the day after the draft, there's always three or four head scratchers of picks. But when you drill down, you realize, okay, this is the type of guy they tend to draft. Is it a little bit of a reach? Maybe. But can't get a trade down, you can't get some action on the board, that's who you take. So I think that was kind of the way I tried to draw it up, and things will change a lot between now and April 26th. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, do I realistically think Chubb's going sixth where I had him and you know, Saquon Barkley's going seventh? Right now, probably not, especially with the JPP trade. But you never know. There's always a guy or two that we expect to go in the top three or four or whatever. They slide. It happens. So that's the beauty of these mocks. It's like a huge Jenga puzzle, and one piece comes out and the whole thing goes down.
Yeah, and I think it's more fulfilling, as you just said. If you have an idea about either a decision maker's kind of tendencies, or at least you're able to really try and match scheme with prospect, I think it can be a little more fulfilling when you do hit on a couple of these guys. A couple examples, and we're not going to give away the whole mocks. You got to go check them out, obviously. Mine on Pro Football Weekly, it'll be up either late tonight or early tomorrow morning. It started in our draft newsletter, which we should also plug if you want free, great draft info in your inbox every weekday morning. Sign up for our free draft newsletter. It's been a huge success, and we're real excited about that. But so I've got for one example, I've got Taven Bryan going to the Atlanta Falcons. He blew up the combine. He's an athletic freak. We know that Thomas Dimitroff and Dan Quinn really value those types of athletes. They want football players, but they want the speed and they want the explosion. And I thought that made a lot of sense. Maybe a little bit of Grady Jarrett insurance for them. One other, Josh Jackson. Yes, his stopwatch time disappointed at the combine. But why not go to a team like the Carolina Panthers, who maybe don't value speed in their secondary quite as much as needing to find guys who can just make plays on the football? And I think we'd probably agree that Josh Jackson has, you know, at least arguably the best ball skills of any corner in this draft. So those are the types of picks that I think made a lot of sense. Some other tricky ones in the AFC North. I know the Ravens need a pass catcher or a skill position player. There was no one there, though, so I ended up giving them an offensive lineman. I know that the Pittsburgh Steelers need a linebacker or a safety, but there was a run on them right before them, so I ended up going with an offensive tackle for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and I have not heard the end of it yet, Eric. My Twitter timeline exploded yesterday with disappointed Steelers fans, so let me apologize to them, but I will say, judging by some of the insults that were directed at me, they're probably not listening to this podcast.
Well, yeah, look, Steelers fans, those same folks who reached out to you also were mad that the Steelers took Artie Burns in round one, or, you know, I mean, there have been plenty of examples of the Steelers, you know, going for a need at a position where there's been a run up ahead of them. And they're not afraid to take a guy with a second round grade late in round one. That ends up happening all the time. So, yeah, I mean, you try to incorporate as many factors. You mentioned the cornerback thing with Jackson. That's why I pegged him to the Packers, is because, you know, you just look, even though Ted Thompson's not running the show, that a good portion of that scouting group is still in place there. They're still going to use a lot of those same benchmarks. And like you said, he ran a 4.56.
Yep.
That's okay for his size. It's not good, but, you know, they like those sort of long-armed, short-area quickness guys who, you know, fit that system. Mike Pettine's going to be a press man, you know, coordinator, I think. You know, so that's why I had him there. That's why he would make sense to, in your pick. I had Isaiah Oliver to the Panthers. So same kind of thinking in terms of a longer arm, bigger frame corner. Got to think about what the teams want, not just the highest rated, you know, player at that position.
Yeah, no doubt. And interestingly, I also went with a cornerback to the Packers. I think I probably reached a little bit. I'll just throw it out there. I went with Jair Alexander of Louisville. And in hindsight, I'm not so sure, only because you mentioned the parameters that the Packers look for. Just look at the 33rd overall pick last year. Of course, it was Kevin King, the long-armed, really big press corner. Alexander's a little bit more slight of frame, but an exciting player. And I think he ran a sub 4.440 at the combine. Yes. So definitely a riser. And and who knows, maybe it happens, but I think at pick number 14, I might have been a little bit rich there with Alexander.
No, I could see it. He's a great nickel defender. He could be a really good man corner. Let me ask you this. There was also some news coming from Adam Schefter of ESPN about Maurice Hurst, interior rusher from Michigan. I was at the Wisconsin game this year. I mean, he was the one guy who was just wrecking their blocking schemes. Anytime you watch him, you can see, you know, the level of performance. He's got that, I don't want to say Aaron Donald-like ability, but, I mean, he's that type of rusher, and he's violent. He's quick off the ball. He can ragdoll people pretty easily. But we didn't know what to do with him because of the irregular EKG at the combine, detected this heart issue. It was something that was detected, I guess, earlier in his life, but he had been cleared medically prior to that. Well, it appears now that he's been cleared again. Did you have him in your mock? And if not, or based on this news that if he apparently can resume football activities, do you think Hurst can be that top 20 guy? Is he somewhere higher on your mock than you put him originally?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. He did not make it into my one-round mock initially, but of course this news from Schefter just came today. It was Hurst who had to leave the combine early after that heart condition was detected. So it was enough to scare me off, certainly. Yep. But I think he could potentially make his way back on here. I mean, you've got not that many defensive tackles. I got Deron Payne in the top 20, Vita Vea right after him. But after that, I'm trying to think if I've got any other interior defenders on this list.
Yeah, Taven Bryan.
Right, excuse me, and Taven Bryan, of course. But, yeah, there's normally room for more. And, yeah, I would think Hurst could probably make his way into the back end of the round one conversation. I think he – well, see, you had done the rankings before we had this news update, but where did you have him in your top 50? I think just out on the outskirts, correct?
No. He made my top 50. I was kind of – you know, I knew somebody in the Michigan program, and I had sort of been asking, hey, what do you think? And, of course, there's a lot of – you know, when it comes to these sort of health things, especially when it, you know, with heart or head or anything like that, you have to be a little bit careful with reporting stuff. So,
right,
double checking with people there, it did sound like they were pretty optimistic about this. So it's not stunning news that Adam Schefter would report this, but, you know, it's obviously great for him. So I took the risk and I said, I'm going to put him in there. I think I've got him in my, you know, low to mid 20s or something. I'll have to double check as we talk here. But yeah, I had him pretty high on my list. I don't think he's in. Perfect prospect, but I think he's pretty good. And this kind of leads me to another item that as I was going through my mock kind of kept popping up in my head. Of course, it's been the off season of trades, and it's been the biggest story. We've seen, you know, quarterbacks traded, we've seen corners, pass rushers with JPP, etc. A lot of guys swapping teams. There's probably more to come. Draft picks certainly are going to be involved. As I went down, especially the latter half of round one, the number of teams that could move down really caught my eye. And you actually projected a pretty fascinating trade in yours. I don't want to give away too much, but feel free to give an idea of what you think might happen. A team like the Rams that, you know, wants to pick up extra selections down there.
Yeah, no team's been more aggressive in trading for veterans this offseason, and frankly, maybe the past couple offseason. I guess you throw Howie Roseman's Eagles and Bill Belichick's Patriots in that mix as well. But the Rams have been up there too. So my thinking was that they were going to have to find a way to recoup some draft capital. And I did find a trade partner for them, the Jacksonville Jaguars, a team looking to go up for a quarterback. So maybe I just won't say who the quarterback is. But basically, the Jaguars are sitting right behind both the Saints and the Steelers, two other teams that could be looking in the 2019 quarterback equation, looking a little bit down the road with their aging future Hall of Famers. So the way I saw it, the way I mocked it, was that the Jaguars would have to jump in front of them to make sure they got their guy. So I did have a trade there. And then I had another one, too. I also have the Bills going up for a quarterback, which will surprise no one. But maybe how far up they go and the team that they do leapfrog to get the last of the top four big passers will kind of qualify as a little bit of a surprise. So you said it, though, Eric. It's been the offseason of trade, so I think there's every reason to believe that that's going to continue once the draft rolls around. It'll just be interesting to see. I was so excited about the Bills about as recently as a week ago, and now I can't help but think that maybe some of their best laid plans continue to kind of get thrown on the back burner a little bit here. I don't know.
Yeah, they obviously have to sort of reevaluate a little bit. But, you know, just for your sake, I'm glad you didn't project the Steelers to draft a quarterback like I did, because that will get the real ire of their fans. They'll tell you how Ben's got 3 years left, even though he threatened to retire last year. But let's forget all that for a moment. So, as I've gone on, I've written these top 50 draft profiles. You know, it's been a little bit interesting to see. And I think this goes into what Peter Bukowski wrote for us, too, is just sort of the unevenness at certain positions. You have a huge drop off with pass rusher, where there's some guys at the top who can be really good. And then you're looking in round two and three, and you're really kind of scrounging for guys. Offensive tackle, there seems to be a little bit of a drop-off, too. And, you know, even though all these quarterbacks going high inevitably is going to push, and we don't know how high, you know, Lamar Jackson or Mason Rudolph are going to go or any of these guys. But still, the four at the top, those two included, you know, it's going to push some first-round talents into round two. And that's a good thing, but I don't know. This is one of those drafts that I'm kind of reevaluating a little bit. I thought it was maybe a little deeper than it was maybe a month ago. You know, maybe when we were at the Senior Bowl combine, I kind of felt like it was maybe a little bit of a deeper draft. Now, I don't know. I'm waffling a little bit. I think there's some good running backs. There's some decent receivers. There's some, you know, more depth at tight end than we've seen in normal years. But some of the other positions, I guess I'm just not quite as excited about the depth as I once was. Maybe it's just pouring over these guys now for a few months, but it's an okay draft class. I don't know that it's a banner year for some reason.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I don't think it's going to be as good as the past couple. And, you know, we thought that the offensive tackles, for one example, were going to be a lot better than last year. And I think they still will be. But then you've got guys like, Orlando Brown, obviously, going into the combine. I think most thought he was a first rounder. Now I think it's more than likely out of the, you know, out of the possibilities for him. Maybe he, you know, can get up, he can get drafted early on day two, but out of round one consideration, most likely. Connor Williams, another example. I still have him in round one. I'm guessing you do too, but those short arms maybe change his NFL fit in the eyes of many teams. Maybe he's going to be a guard now. So one example of how things kind of change in the pre-draft process. I think the position that maybe is going to get pushed down, interestingly, because it is so deep, it is such an exceptional class, but how many running backs do you have in round one of your mock draft? Because I only ended up with one of them, and I think there's going to be some round one talents that are going to be available probably early on day two.
Yeah, one as well for me. I mean, I had Barkley even slipping a little by based on what some people feel he could end up going. And who knows? I mean, I think he'll probably end up a top five or six pick. But again, you know, things happen. But you're right. I only had the one. And I sat there and thought, is there a spot for Sony Michel? Could somebody take Darius Geis at the end of round one? Does Ronald Jones, you know, excite people enough? I don't think so. And you know, the reports on Jones looked a lot better at the end of the season than he has now. The post-draft process hasn't been super kind to him. And you have other guys like Rashad Penny, and I'm sure I'm forgetting two or three of them. But, you know, Nick Chubb has done well for himself, Sony Michel's teammate at Georgia. So, I mean, there are other backs, and I like Royce Freeman. There are a couple other guys who I think will be good round two and three picks, like Kareem Hunt, like Alvin Kamara, some of these guys in recent years, David Johnson, third-round pick, et cetera. So that still exists. I think you and I are simpatico on that, is that, you know, if you get a chance to draft Barkley, great. Is there going to be a back or two or three in rounds, you know, after the 40th pick and before the 100th pick who ends up being very good? Yeah, I think so. I think it's the same this year as it was last year.
Yeah, and I'm also curious about both linebackers and safeties. It's been an interesting free agent market for those positions, and I think it's largely because of the depth in the draft. And maybe one thing that I'm kind of second-guessing with my own mock draft is I had a late in round one kind of linebacker run. I've got Leighton Vander Esch. I've actually got Darius Leonard squeezing into round one. And now I kind of wonder. I love both of the players, but because there is so much depth, I kind of wonder if maybe those are the types of guys that will be found early in day two. And you could say the same thing for the safety position, whether you're talking about Ronnie Harrison from Alabama, you're talking about maybe Justin Reed from Stanford, who you just wrote about this week. Do those guys fit into the top 32 picks, or is some team maybe even looking to move up for someone like a Justin Reed early in round two, because he does have a very exciting NFL profile, and obviously he's got the bloodlines. We've seen his brother do it, although his brother can't seem to find another job. I wonder why that would be, Eric.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought that up, and I've been trying to reach out to people in the aging community. We obviously know they're going to always be, you know, pro player in all their perspectives. But yeah, I mean, two players who were among the more active and prominent, kneelers during the anthem stuff, were Eric Reed from the 49ers and also Michael Thomas from the Dolphins. There are a couple other guys as well, of course, but both of those players are safeties. Neither one of them has gotten really a sniff or a whiff of action in the free agent market. But then again, you know, Trey Boston, crickets on him, haven't heard much. Kenny Vaccaro, haven't really seen, you know, he got cut prior to the free agent period, I believe. So, you know, you're right. I think probably there's some draft depth that has created less urgency to go out and sign one of these guys. I think there have been a couple who signed. I have to go and look at the list. But, yeah, that's a factor. But you're right. The draft also parlays into this as well, and teams aren't going to go crazy just like they wouldn't for running backs necessarily either, because the draft offers some depth there. So let's start bringing it home a little bit as we wrap up the Pro Football Weekly podcast. We've got a lot going on at the website. We mentioned the team for the ages. We want you guys to get involved in that. Pick your favorite 50-man roster from the past 50 years in NFL history. You can win some great, great, great prizes. We've also got our continued draft coverage. Greg Gable is written tons of great scouting reports. I'm doing my top 50 draft profiles. Arthur and I have mock drafts. He's going to get involved in a lot of this stuff as well. So what else we have going on this week? I know obviously a lot of pro days are going on too. Did you make anything about the Sam Darnold rain performance that everyone was getting all excited about? He wanted to throw in the rain and show the Browns he can play in bad weather. Does that have any impact in your mind on his willingness to go to a bad team?
Nope, doesn't do much for me at all. Pro days, these things are scripted. So, no, I think the media loves them because it's obviously a 24-hour news cycle now, draft time and everything. But, no, as long as Darnold didn't get hurt and as long as he didn't do anything to embarrass himself, which it sounds like he certainly didn't, just the opposite, obviously, I don't think it'll affect his stock all that much. It's looking like the Browns are closing in on him as the number one overall pick. Jimmy Haslam, the owner, I guess, spent the afternoon sitting in the bleachers with Sam Darnold's parents. So make of that what you will. But it's interesting stuff, I guess. But I don't think it really has anywhere near the value of the private workouts. Greg Gabriel always reminds us of that this time of the year. So, I don't know. And I know Johnny Manziel, I guess, was working out at the University of Houston Pro Day today, which is kind of interesting as he tries to sort of, resuscitate his NFL career. So that'll be an interesting thing to follow as he partakes in the spring league here in the coming months. But Eric, before we do get out of here, a couple more reminders. Everyone needs to check out, they don't need to, but we'd love it if they did check out the Pro Football Weekly podcast over on iTunes. Subscribe to us while you're over there. We really do appreciate that. And I just have to take 1 minute because we didn't get into them a ton, but Eric is doing these draft profiles, his top 50 countdown, 7 days a week. And I just, there's nowhere else on the internet that you are going to find the quality profile profiles being done, and as frequently as Eric is doing them, I have been just loving the series, and I really hope our listeners are checking them out too, because they're just they're so well done, and I'm learning a lot about a lot of the top prospects in the draft. So take a bow, Eric. You've really done a great job.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, look, I'm not a scout. I know enough to know what I don't know, and what other people know better than I do. So I try to mix the X and O stuff. I try to mix some of the personality. You know, are these guys engaging personalities? Are they quiet? Are they leaders? Are they not? You know, do they play other sports? Were they highly recruited prospects coming out of high school? Have they said interesting things or had other people say interesting things about them? And what teams do they fit with? You know, to me, we're going back to what the mock stuff. You know, just because a guy is universally rated as a prospect doesn't mean he fits every team to a T. So, you know, I try to give some thought as to, like, okay, he'd be a little better in this type of system, a little less preferred in this type of scheme. So, you know, just a little variety of stuff from each of these products. And it's hard to narrow it to 50. I left guys out who easily could have been on there, but and things change all the time. But I've been having fun with them. We've got 34 more to go. We're down to number 35, Tyrell Crosby, a tackle from Oregon. So, yeah, please do check that out. And thanks for checking us out today on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. We'll be back next week. Most of the pro days will be done, a couple left lingering, but we'll try to keep churning on the draft stuff. Go to profootballweekly.com and continue listening to us. Thanks, guys.